This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Help me welcome to the program, Rick Sincere. That should be your theme song. You like it?
Sure.
You want to be the Spider-Man?
Why not?
I have no idea why, but I love this song. That was one of my favorite cartoons when I was a kid, the Spider-Man. So Rick Sincere is with us, and the news in Charlottesville. You're former chairman of the Libertarian Party of Virginia. We have a whole lot we want to talk about. But you're also chairman of the Electoral Board for the city of Charlottesville. So very involved in those issues, in the voting issues in the city. And y'all have a very, very big task before you.
Yeah, actually we do. This is something that we knew for sure was going to happen after the 2008 election. There's a law in Virginia that says that if there are 4,000 people who vote in a single precinct in a presidential election year, you have to split that precinct. You have to divide it into two or more parts. And so after the 2008 election, we knew that Venable Precinct had 4,000 voters and that it was time to change. We did some research and discovered that Charlottesville has had 8 precincts going back at least to the 1920s, perhaps longer than that. They have really not been redesigned since maybe the 1960s or 70s, although we've changed some voting locations over the years. For instance, what's now Tonsler Park Precinct used to be called Firehouse because people voted at the Firehouse.
Right.
Now they vote at Tonsler Park. Jefferson Park Precinct, the voting location for that has changed, I think, at least 4 times since I've lived in Charlottesville, and I just moved here in 1999. So this gives us an opportunity to sort of make the whole system more logical. And there's an advisory committee that was put together, which is bipartisan and includes all sorts of people from organizations like the League of Women Voters, the Democratic Party, Republican Party, the Independence Resource Center, UVA. I think there are about 9 or 10 people on the advisory committee. Last week, we sat down with a computer and we did some experimentation, and we came up with a plan that would add one precinct to Charlottesville for a total of 9.
And this is for the first time in decades, a new voting precinct.
Right. And so we're going to have another meeting tonight. I leave here, I leave the studio, go directly to City Hall where we're going to have another meeting. And this was set up by City Council. They wanted our advice. And City Council will have to vote on the changes. They actually have to create an ordinance that will define all the precincts with meets and bounds. It's a complicated process. It used to be complicated when you have to do it with pencil and paper. Now with computers, it's great.
We're talking with Rick Sincere. So now there are 8 voting precincts in the city.
Right.
And it's likely they could approve an additional 9th.
Right. That's the idea.
Do we know where it would be or what?
Well,
what
the new precinct right now has
would it be carved out of one?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. Well, we actually carved out all of the precincts. Everything's going to look different than it was. One of the problems was that under Virginia law, Alumni Hall Precinct actually had an illegal configuration. It's a precinct is supposed to be contiguous and compact, and Alumni Hall actually had a slice of Albemarle County dividing it into 2 parts. We're lucky nobody ever sued us about that. But so what's happened is that the northern part of Alumni Hall Precinct is now being attached to what used to be Venable Precinct. The southern part is attached to what used to be Jefferson Park Precinct. We've divided Jefferson Park Precinct into 2. So we've got a working name for the new precinct as Jefferson Park North. But we're not going to maintain those names. It'll be different. But it's a fascinating prospect. I'm just glad that reprecincting, as we call it, does not have all of the same messes that redistricting has. We don't have to take into consideration incumbency. We don't have to take into consideration racial makeup. We don't have to worry about, you know,
it's just numbers
distribution.
Numbers
right,
and contingent.
Just raw numbers.
Based on the new census
figures. Now, what's really interesting is Charlottesville has had a rather stable population for the past 40 years. The 1970 census showed Charlottesville with about 39,000 people. The 2010 census gives Charlottesville just over 43,000. So we've only really grown by about 4,000 people
amazing?
In 40 years.
That's amazing.
But
because you know there's a lot more homes here than there were in 1970.
I can't explain that. Of course, Albemarle County has grown by a lot more than that. But still, in Charlottesville, our number of registered voters has grown tremendously just in the past 10 years or so. When Sherry Iachetta became registrar in 1999, which was 5 years before I joined the electoral board, there were 17,000 registered voters in Charlottesville out of a population of about 40,000. Today, we have a registered voter population of just about 28,000.
Wow.
We have increased our number of registered voters by more than 50%. We've got a 74% registration rate among eligible voters, which is the population of 18 years and over. The average across the country is about 50 or 55% registration rate. Charlottesville residents are tremendously engaged in the political process, and they register at greater numbers than you would see almost anywhere else. And that explains our relatively high voter turnouts, even in, I don't like to use the word off year because we have elections every year in Virginia, but in those elections that do not include a presidential campaign, we have relatively high turnout compared to other places around the state and around the country.
Now, explain this process. Rick Sincere is with us, chairman of the electoral board for the city of Charlottesville, looking at creating a, not just creating a new precinct, but also redrawing all the lines for all the precincts,
right.
Which is going to be, explain the process to us. And when we first might see this go into effect?
Well, let me give you an example. Our most densely populated precinct turns out to be Venable Precinct, or at least what will be the precinct where people vote at Venable School. When we redesigned the precincts, that precinct moved from being very large geographically to perhaps being only about four square blocks, and yet it's still going to be population-wise the largest precinct in the city. It's just has a very high election age population. In fact, I don't have the figures right in front of me, but I think it was almost 98% of the people who live in that new precinct are over the age of 18, which is just absolutely amazing. And yet they're going to vote at a school, so those kids must go to, come from somewhere, but they're not from that neighborhood.
Interesting. Now, will this change where people vote?
There will be some changes in where people vote. And one example is, right now, Carver Precinct is at the Jefferson School. Jefferson School is going to be renovated over the next couple of years, so we're not going to be able to use that location for the next four elections. So from November 2011 until November 2012, the people at Jefferson who vote in Carver Precinct will be voting somewhere else, and we don't yet know where that location is going to be. People who vote in Jefferson Park Precinct now will probably be voting at the new Boys and Girls Club near Buford Middle School. We'll probably move Walker Precinct to Charlottesville High School. None of this is set in concrete yet.
It's all still fluid, but right. This is, you're sharing with us sort of behind the scenes. This is what's on the table.
Yeah, this is what we're talking about. All of this has to be approved by city council, and it's not done without input from the public.
Yeah.
We'll present these plans to city council. They'll choose one of them, and they'll propose an ordinance, and then they have to have a public hearing in which any person who lives in Charlottesville can come and say what they think about the plans. And city council has the ultimate authority to define what our voting precincts are and where people vote in Charlottesville. Also, the Department of Justice, the U.S. Department of Justice, has to approve anything that we propose.
So the first time we might see this used is this November?
Yes, that's the plan. We're going to use these new precincts in November. And everybody in the city will get a new voting card. We'll probably send them a letter. We're going to have public forums. We might have...
you can come on this radio show.
Yeah, I'll talk to you on the radio. We'll probably have receptions or public forums at each of the new voting precincts so people can come and see them and get used to the location, find out where they can park. One of the things the city council has insisted on, and we're trying our best to follow this, is that every one of the new voting polling locations will be accessible by public transportation. We want to make sure that people can either get to their polls by walking or taking the bus or by driving their own cars or bicycles.
Yeah. This is really interesting. So it'll be a little while before all of this is approved. What do you see that you like most about it? And we have to do this because of the census. All the numbers are changing. And what do you see as the trickiest thing about it?
Well, the trickiest thing is that there's a limited number of public buildings in Charlottesville that meet all of the criteria we need to have in order to have a voting location, a polling place under federal and state law. You know, let me give you an example. We've looked at a number of the schools around town, like Johnson and Jackson Fire and Buford Middle School, and they might have a really good room where we could. There's lots of space, and there could be people voting, but the parking lot is too far away from that room. And we have to be accessible to people who are in wheelchairs or otherwise handicapped. And so,
and you can't do it in a church, right?
Well, we can do it in a church, but we prefer not to because people are very sensitive about places of worship, both because they want to be respectful and because, you know, some people are very insistent on separation of church and state. Yeah. We had a great location at Cherry Avenue Christian Church, but it wasn't in the worship space. It was in a gymnasium behind the church. And that they had great parking and everything. Unfortunately, their schedule and our schedule don't mesh, and we are not able to use that location anymore. So that's a possibility. But there's a limited number of public buildings in Charlottesville that are appropriate for polling places. And so we're doing a survey of all of the possibilities, and we'll probably come up with a list of 15 or 20 places that are possibilities. And in the end, we'll have 9 actual polling locations. And we should have those in place by the time of the date of the primary, which is now, for this year, it will be August 23rd rather than in June, so that everybody will have plenty of notice as to where they're going to vote in November.
Quite a big project here in the city of Charlottesville. You are likely to have a new voting precinct. We will continue to follow that for you. And Rick Sincere, chairman of the Electoral Board in the city of Charlottesville, working on this now with a lot of folks in the city. We're talking with Rick Sincere live in studio. Now, you went up to CPAC.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to attend one day of the Conservative Political Action Caucus, or CPAC, up in D.C. I was there the day that Ron Paul gave his speech, and he came down after a speech to sign books. And the crowd in the exhibition hall was absolutely huge.
That's become the Ron Paul convention, hasn't it?
It really has. He's won the straw poll 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
When a friend of mine was helping at the booth where he was signing books, he signed over 1,000 books.
Wow.
And he ran out of ink in his pen 3 times. And he said, "I'm so glad my name is short."
But it's really interesting when what's his name? Trump was there and said publicly, you know, he can't win. Ron Paul can't win. The crowd got really angry.
Yeah, there are a lot of Ron Paul supporters at CPAC. It's a very libertarian gathering now, although a lot of sort of the old line conservatives don't want to admit that. It's not just because of Ron Paul. It's because most of the people who attend CPAC tend to be college students. That's just the way it's designed. There's always a lower registration fee for college students. A lot of political campaigns, including Mitt Romney's, recruit college students to come and give them reduced price tickets. I was there with Governor Gary Johnson of New Mexico, who's my favored candidate for president next year. He came in 3rd in the straw poll, but he was the second choice. They asked people on the straw poll, "What's your second choice?" And he came in 1st on the second choice poll. And I think that's really important because it should, you know, a lot of people would like to say none of the above when they're given a list of 16 candidates.
Yeah.
And so the guy who comes in the 1st in the second choice poll, it has a very strong position to go into.
And this was another year when Sarah Palin, you know, stood him up and didn't show up.
Well, she didn't stand them up. I mean, she was pretty clear that she would have been there, but she had a another engagement. There was a fake Sarah Palin,
which was
there.
The problem last year for her too,
yeah.
Right? How
right.
bad does she want to go there?
I don't know, but the fake Sarah Palin was lots of fun. I actually got duped by her, and the reason was this was a Sarah Palin impersonator. She from a distance looked just like her, and the reason it was easy to think that it really was Sarah Palin was because the day before Dick Cheney had shown up unexpectedly to speak at an award presentation for Donald Rumsfeld, and I thought it was kind of ironic that Donald Rumsfeld was getting the Defender of the Constitution Award, but that's an issue for another day. But one of the reasons Dick Cheney was there was he was there to support an organization called Go Proud, which is an organization of gay conservatives. And a handful of CPAC participants had decided they were not going to show up this year because they didn't want gay conservatives there too. And Dick Cheney showed up specifically because he wanted to commend CPAC for saying the conservative movement is a big tent movement and tolerance is a conservative value.
Yeah.
And Rumsfeld said something similar. And apparently the next day, although I have not been able to confirm this, the next day, former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld came out in favor of ending the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy.
was huge news.
Yeah, and apparently the media's missed it.
I guess
it kind of slipped through all of the other clutter in the news.
We're talking with Rick Sincere, and Eric is on the line in Charlottesville. Hey, Eric, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great. Wonder if Rick could comment on the purge from the Young Americans for Freedom of the Ron Paul contingent and Ron Paul himself from the board of directors. I know that the Young Americans for Freedom are a big presence at CPAC, and that there was practically a scuffle when some of Ron Paul's folks shouted at Dick Cheney and called him a war criminal. But on the other hand, also the AF guys also put out a really nasty, mean-spirited poster suggesting that Ron Paul was insane and that he was off his meds and just really mean-spirited stuff on the part of YAF. So my question is, to what extent, Rick, do you think that this split, particularly as represented by the purge in the Young Americans for Freedom, is going to be something that down the road has some sort of impact on the party as a whole? Or do you think this is just the sort of thing that happens at CPAC every year and it's just kind of a rowdy thing? Or I just kind of want to get your take on that and want to hear what you had to say about that.
Eric, thank you for the call. Great call, as always. And
Eric has the
remind
facts.
People what Young Americans for Freedom is.
Young Americans for Freedom was founded 50 years ago, 1960, at the Sharon Conference. And it was a major force in the 1960s. And there's nothing new to purges and YAF. I mean, the 1969 YAF St. Louis Convention is famous for the split between the libertarians and the social conservatives. It goes back for decades. The problem is that YAF is no longer the force it once was. Young Americans for Freedom is a rump operation now. It has 155 fans on Facebook. If you can't get more than 200 fans on Facebook these days, you're nothing. What's a much more vibrant organization is Young Americans for Liberty, which shares a lot of the same values as Young Americans for Freedom, but it's more explicitly libertarian. It's made up by a lot of Ron Paul supporters. And there's also another group affiliated with that called Students for Liberty. And if you were at CPAC, if just going to the exhibition hall, if you saw the booth for YAF, if you saw the booth for YAL, Young Americans for Liberty, you'd know which is the up-and-coming group. The YAF table was practically empty, and there were crowds gathered around the Young Americans for Liberty table. That's the direction that the conservative movement is taking.
Now, what about Eric's question? Does this pose some kind of long-term split, or is just business as usual?
It's business as
Republicans
usual.
Republicans like to eat their own, and conservatives like to eat their own.
It's the part of the process. This has been going on for 50 years. I would not make any more significance out of it than if this had happened 5 years ago. Yeah. I mean, there are people in the conservative movement today who would purge Ronald Reagan because of some of the things he'd... You know, Ronald Reagan was in favor of amnesty for illegal immigrants. People forget that.
Yeah.
He passed a major or pushed forward a major immigration bill in 1986.
And he raised taxes like crazy throughout the 80s. I mean, people often forget that, too. We only got about a minute left, but I wanted to ask you about your thoughts about Webb saying he doesn't want to run again.
I predicted it. Jim Webb does not like campaigning. I think he did not look forward to campaigning against George Allen, who loves to campaign. George Allen's a real people person. Jim Webb is a cerebral kind of guy who prefers to be at home with his typewriter. And I would have predicted a long time ago that he was not going to run for reelection. I don't think it's going to have much of an impact on the Republican race for the nomination. I think George Allen is the favorite right now. It'll be interesting to see whether Tim Kaine runs for Webb's seat. But when the president of the United States calls you into the office and says,
Tim Kaine versus George Allen, what do you think? Who?
It'll be close, but I think George Allen will win.
Rick Sincere, online at ricksincere.com. Thanks, Rick.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.